Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the new reality for stocks, what higher rates for longer mean for your investing strategy. The Investment Committee debating that key question today. Joining me for the hour, Joe Terranova, Jason Snipe, Stephen Weiss, and Bryn Talkington. Let's check the markets here. We are down across the board. There is your look at the three major averages. Joe, I got the 10-year at 460. We've been pressured by higher interest rates. We know that. We're on pace now for the third negative week in a row. What do I need to do? How do I need to adjust? I want to try and be actionable for our viewers on what the playbook looks like, if the playbook needs to change.
Okay, well, first of all, you have to understand time is the enemy, because this correction could be more prolonged than we have become accustomed to in recent years. Secondarily, you need to remain patient. But if you need to do something right now, you need to focus on industries that have pricing power. Who has pricing power? We know semiconductors and semiconductor equipment have pricing power. NVIDIA is nearly 12% off of its all-time high. So I would focus on what's your semiconductor exposure. I would also look at software. I would look at services, insurance companies, private equities. Commodities are on the retreat. Energy is pulling back. I still see a disincentive to increase production, a very tight supply to demand balance. So I would look at those industries because they have pricing power. That's most critical right now. And then the last thing I would do is I would identify the areas of the market that I don't want to be in. And we're going to get to that in one second. But I'll tell you, there's a couple areas of the market that you absolutely need to avoid.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Bryn, do I need to change my playbook for what, you know, is going to be a different kind of market perhaps over the next few months than we once thought it would be, with this higher for longer idea, which the chair himself, Powell, sort of reiterated yesterday in those remarks that he made? So what does it mean for what I need to do?
If your playbook was necessary to have rate cuts, or you had a macro thematic view, you absolutely need to kind of throw that playbook out, because it's not just like this last mile of interest rates, of inflation, is going to take longer. Maybe this mile turns into a marathon. And so I think that from that playbook, if you were in economically or interest rate sensitive sectors like small cap and other areas that Joe has consistently touched on, I think you definitely need to rethink that playbook. Also, I think from an actionable idea, you know, last year selling calls wasn't a great strategy because the market just went straight higher for the most part. As volatility has kicked up, and especially going into earnings seasons, which I think is going to be really brutal for companies that disappoint, I know we're going to talk about ASML, is start thinking about selling calls against those positions, because the premium on a lot of these names has gotten meaningfully higher just really over the last month. So I think, you know, keep your eyes open, read your reports, think about selling some calls, especially on these names where there's potential downside pressure in the earnings report this year.
I'm really thinking about those yield plays that we just threw up there, you know, Jason Snipe. It's the utilities, it's REITs, it's the dividend aristocrats, you know, right? Companies that have raised their dividends for decades consistently that are part of that group. We know, you know, a good portion of our viewers like the dividends that they get. AbbVie, Caterpillar. Yep. They don't necessarily have to be huge dividends either. Just the idea that if you look at the performance over the last month of utilities down 3.5% as rates have gone up, or staples, for example, down 4% this month, REITs down 9.5%, the aristocrats are down 5.5% for the AbbVies, the Caterpillars, the Colgate, Palmolives, the Lowe's, the Proctors. Do I need to rethink what's going on?
So I think, you know, for me, as it relates to rates, you know, one part of it is obviously the number, 10-year at 4.6, a 2-year close to 5%. But the other piece has obviously been the pace, right? So as it relates to kind of asset allocation, where you should be putting money. So the factors for me that are important is free cash flow and very strong balance sheet. So I start to turn to what Joe just mentioned, is energy. I think energy, obviously we've seen the performance year to date, up 13% year to date, and the OPEC, which is committed to supply cuts through June. So there's pricing power there, and there's continued pressure on prices. So I like the commodity, and I like a lot of the fully integrated plays there.
Weiss, does this stay correlated as long as rates remain elevated and or continue to back up? Utility staples, REITs, dividend plays, and some others are going to be under pressure?
Yeah, actually, but it's not just them. I think the dialogue is all wrong here in searching for opportunities in the market. I think the dialogue should be there's a time to invest, and there's a time to protect your cash and protect your holdings and protect your capital overall. This is that time. So
to protect rather to invest, because some are suggesting
home and play golf or stay at work and turn your market monitors off, because the market's going to go lower. What we're in is an adjustment period. And so we still have firms out there, believe it or not, despite even what Powell said yesterday, look for 3 cuts this year. I don't know what planet they're living on, but come to Planet Halftime, as you quoted last week. And look, I've taken my net exposure down to about 20%, you know, and I mentioned that earlier in the week. I think that you're not going to miss it, right? So we don't know. The market's been a borrowed time, in my view. It's been a borrowed time for a long period of time, and I've participated in it in terms of putting off what the impact of rate hikes will do, what an extended, you know, tightening cycle, restrictive monetary cycle will do. We're in it. So the only bet to make now is, will the economy still be able to thrive in this highly restrictive environment? Now, the reason why it's gotten through is because we've had a lot of liquidity put in by the government through spending, through the IRA, et cetera. What happens if you get a Republican administration? Do you think that's going to continue? I don't. I think they cut it back.
So what, are you not going to sit on your hands until the results come out in November?
No, I'm going to sit on my hands until the rest of the street comes along and says, okay, no hikes this year, or maybe one. I'm going to sit on my hands until valuations get more normalized than they are. And I'm going to sit on my hands till people realize that it's not as easy as it's been for the last couple of years.
So you wouldn't buy this weakness yet?
No, I wouldn't. So even when stocks get hit, I wouldn't buy it. I still think the odds are the market trend's low. Look, we've had no bounce. Think of a period of time where we've had no real bounce. And when the bounce has been there, it's been immediately
eroded.
We've
had no bounce. I mean, what are we off from the highs? Like 3 or 4%?
4%. Exactly. And that's my point. 4% is not enough for a correction.
Why does there need to be a major correction if the eye is still on the prize of eventual rate cuts?
Okay.
It's not like Powell yesterday in his remarks suggested that they're thinking about hiking rates.
No.
He didn't even mention that.
It's the impact of higher rates for longer. You don't need hikes. That's purely what
we've got to hear about that again, of the lag effects of the rate hikes?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think rates don't impact an economy?
Well, they obviously have an impact, but you mentioned the stimulus that was put into the system.
Which is
the economy's far more stronger today than you thought it would be.
Right.
Yeah, no
and,
doubt.
And everybody
no
else,
That's
including the Fed chair.
That's why I participate. But ultimately, and I looked at this going back, every time we've been in a restrictive cycle, GDP has gone down meaningfully. Not every time a recession.
Forecasts for the first quarter are going up.
My point is that right now the market's coming to realize that perhaps we've been on borrowed time in terms of what higher for longer will mean.
We haven't even had earnings really yet.
And that's
about to get started. I'm
going to play the counter argument to Stephen's position, and his position appears to be the right one right now, both in what he's speaking and in the practice of what he's actually got in the marketplace. 166 companies report next week, a third of the S&P. We've got 5 of the Mag 7 reporting next week. That is going to be a moment that is really going to define the direction of this market. if those Mag 5 are able to deliver once again and steady the decline that we've seen recently. If not, then the correction's ultimately going to continue. I also want to point everyone real quickly to May 1st, because remember, here comes another Treasury refunding. And the last two Treasury refundings have been positive catalysts for the market, both in February and in November. The market rallied off of both of those. So next week's going to be critical. Back to what you just said before, by the way, REITs, utilities, do not go anywhere near there. You said the S&P's off 4%. Do you know the Russell is off 20%? It's all-time high. I wouldn't touch the Russell 2000
down,
right now.
The Russell's down 7.5% this month. This
20%
month.
Below its all-time high.
Days.
That's a bear market.
Into the month, would you own a home builder right now? But the home builder ETF, the XHB, is down 9% this month. D.R. Horton reports this Thursday. You own that. That stock's down 11% this month. Why?
Yes.
Rates are up.
D.R. Horton and Lennar both below their 100-day moving average for the first time in many, many months, challenging the positive momentum that's in place. And on the fundamental side, both the home builder survey and housing starts are suggesting that you're beginning to see weakening in demand. The spring season is not suggesting that it's going to be as strong as we've witnessed in prior spring. So I think, you know, to answer your question, at the end of the month, we will rebalance the ETF and we'll see what we do with these home builders. But they're certainly not in what I like to call the green light scenario.
Yeah, okay,
they're certainly a yellow light.
You raise an interesting point in that this backup in rates comes at a really interesting time for you personally. Because you're going to have to do your rebalance in the face of what has been a changing story that could change the momentum and already has in the market. You may be looking at things differently today than you were just 3-4 weeks ago as you approach your rebalance.
Very accurate. Momentum has appeared to roll over in the last several weeks. It really reached a crescendo in the last week of March, and there's areas of the market that were exhibiting very strong momentum that have had a very fast deterioration.
Let me tell you this. I mean, if I look through the Joe T, and if you don't want to comment on any of these individually because of this approaching rebalance, you don't have to, but you've got a lot of things that are possibly in play here. Brown & Brown, Cat, Chubb, Cintas, Fastenal, W.W. Granger, Nucor, S&P Global, West Pharmaceutical. Remember, these are the names I'm ripping off here are either utility staples, REITs, dividend aristocrats, things like that. Extra space storage, Host Hotels and Resorts, public storage. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot potentially to think about. Bryn, you've been thinking about the Russell for a while, saying, telling our viewers, don't touch it. Don't touch it until you get rate cuts. As we said, the Russell's down 7.5% this month.
Right. I mean, first of all, everyone's saying, like, throughout the year, saying, well, it doesn't matter if we have rate cuts. The Fed just has to signal that we're going to have rate cuts. I just think that we're in this unique time. And I continue to hear people say, well, we've had rates at this side, at this level before in the 90s. But what we haven't had, folks, is rates going from 0 to 5. Then at the same time, on the fiscal side, for 4+ years, just juicing the economy. The fiscal side keeps fighting the Fed, and that to me is just overwhelming what should be a slowing economy and lowering rates. And I think that the small cap side, whether it's small cap value, which are regional banks, or small cap growth, which are unprofitable, I think that you're not going to get momentum, sentiment, or positioning changing into that sector until we get a few more CPIs. So I think until we get at least 2 more CPIs, and have really an understanding of what the trajectory is, if we're going to be in the 3-4 or that's going to start heating back up, do not touch small caps.
I mean, Weiss, Bank of America says the 10-year could top 5% by Memorial Day. What would happen to this market if we had a 10-year above 5? Is that the breaking point? Remember Tony Pescarello a couple weeks ago says, you know, at what point do higher rates start to take a bite? All right, maybe they're starting now. Is 5% the breaking point?
I don't think the 10-year is what's driving the market. I think it's the 2-year. I think it's the 5-year. And we're already pretty much at 5. We're at 5% in the 2-year. Because if you're an equity investor, you're not going, if you can get 5% in a 10-year, sure, you locked up for 10 years and have the optionality. But they've already locked up 5% in the 2-year. If you're an equity investor, that's where you go. You don't hide for a decade. You hide for a couple of years. That's what I've done. So I'm getting
so we're
a great
back,
yield
we're
there.
Back to an alternative to stocks conversation.
Without a doubt.
That we thought we had moved beyond.
Right.
That's critical, actually, because we really thought that the narrative had changed. You're like, okay, right. There's all these trillions of dollars on the sidelines or in money market funds. Right. They're all going to pour into the equity market. That's going to lead to the next leg higher. Well, Jason, maybe now we're rethinking this and saying, okay, rates are backing up again. So maybe my safest play right now is to go back into the money market that I thought I was going to put into the equity market.
Yeah. No, and that's absolutely a possibility. I think the other thing that we need to consider is maybe the target changes, the 2% target. Maybe they're moving to 3% potentially, right? I mean, we've all talked about how long the travel down for that last leg of the cycle, trying to get rates down, is going to be difficult. Maybe the target moves. But I think Weiss does make a good point. I think on the short end of the curve, that's where the focus needs to be. Yes, if there's a 2-year trading at 5%, which it is right now, I think that's a safe place to be, given kind of the how we're trying to navigate the current marketplace. But again, if you're rule-based or you have to be in the market, there still is opportunity.
I want to move on, talk about some stocks of the day. ASML is one of them, because chips are going to be an interesting place to watch today after they missed. Stock getting hit pretty good, down 8%. Weiss, you own it.
I do.
You trimmed it earlier today?
I did. It just seemed to me that in pre-market, it was looking down like 46 bucks, which was about 4.8%. It seemed to me that underestimated the decline. So I trimmed a little bit.
You cut your losses
a week ago. I mean, the street overall was looking for a miss this quarter, but we got more than a miss. I didn't expect a miss of this magnitude. So I thought it would trade lower. Look, if you take a look, even though they beat the bottom line, the miss for the guidance for the second quarter is pretty stark. It's pretty aggressive. Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I think. In a normal market down here, I'd probably take a look at it, maybe nibble on it, but not now with the market environment. They confirmed, if you think about the company, right, there's a long lead time to their book of business. What they make, the what they sell to semiconductors, their machinery is the size of a bus. So that doesn't manufacture overnight. It's not like clothing, it's not like food. So the point of it is, when they come out and they tell you that they're maintaining the guidance for the year, that means they'll be delivering a lot more, shipping a lot more in the third quarter and fourth quarter. So I do think you'll see it come back. They are critical to AI, they are critical to chips, mm-hmm. and they're the only ones that do what they do with lithography and with their EUV, their extreme ultraviolet technology, which is new. So I'm confident in the company still, but in this market, it's not bouncing back anytime soon. It's a show me story now.
So what does it make you think about Taiwan Semi, which reports tomorrow?
Taiwan Semi is less of a mystery, because they tell you how they're doing throughout the year. You can look at monthly numbers. Look, I'm concerned about every company that's reporting this environment, because there's no parachute on the downside. But Taiwan Semi, which is and was a larger position than ASML, is I'm comfortable with it.
I mean, it's down today. NVIDIA's down today, even though it gets a positive mention, Joe, at Morgan Stanley. $1,000 reiterated as a price target. Stock was in correction. It rallied back, down 22 bucks, though, today. What do I need to think about the chips right now?
NVIDIA's in correction territory, very clearly.
Yep.
Now, we all know the fundamental strength that this company has, but I'll tell you this. The earnings report is going to be very important. It's going to be important because what's happening is this dynamic that as NVIDIA moves lower, the algorithmic quantitative funds that only focus on price, it just avalanches. And there's a snowball effect of more and more selling as price goes lower. And that's exactly what's going on right now. So you need something to push up against that. And I think it's ultimately earnings that have to step forward and be that positive catalyst, if anything's going to be. So there's a little bit more pressure, I think, on this earnings report for NVIDIA to really deliver the type of earnings that they've delivered in the past.
Adam Parker, Bryn, suggests that NVIDIA and the earnings report is the most important data point of the entire earnings season. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, first of all, Adam has such a long history in semis, so I always want to listen to what Adam has to say in the semi space. Absolutely, because the only company the only company, I guess, outside of Supermicro, but the only big company that's really delivering on AI is NVIDIA. Because when you get $11 trillion made up of five companies all buying the same product, you get NVIDIA's outcome. And I think you still want to see NVIDIA continuing to have these really big beats and guide higher. And so I think NVIDIA is going to be incredibly important. And I think Microsoft second to that, because they're actually monetizing Copilot. And so I think those are going to be the two most important AI stories this quarter.
AI is going to get a good test next week when those mega caps start reporting. Jason, you've been trimming NVIDIA of late. You concerned going into this quarter that at some point they're just not going to measure up to where the hype machine has taken the stock?
So I don't think that point is anytime soon, to be honest with you. I think the report will be really strong in this quarter, and I agree with Joe. I think it's extremely important, and it is in corrective territory, down 12% in the last few weeks, still up 73% year to date. And I thought the conference went really well, talking about their partnerships, ongoing partnerships, the new Blackwell chip, and what they're doing in support of developers. So I think it's going to be important. It continues to get cheaper, however, with obviously the guidance and the earnings growth. So let's see how it plays out.
Yeah, Microsoft, Joe, is next Thursday. Alphabet next Thursday as well. You got Amazon on the 30th. So you got a lot in the near term that's going to have a big say on where this market goes from here.
Absolutely. A lot is riding on next week with the Mega Cap 5. In addition to that, Apple is incredibly important as well. And we thought that Apple was developing some positive momentum last week. It went from 167 to 178 Wednesday to Thursday on the news about AI.
That was like one of the best days, if not the best day in a year.
It looked great. I was on Closing Bell with you. I was excited about the fundamental news, being able to incorporate AI into the Macs and potentially delivering an iPhone 16 AI as well. And there was excitement. There was clearly some strong buying interest. It got up to 178, but it's fallen right back. I mean, that's indicative of a stock that is struggling. It's a stock that has already lost its positive momentum. It's got negative momentum for sure. And it's very discouraging to see that type of pullback below 170.
How about this, Weiss? Today, we made it our call of the day because you've got Maxim Group out today. They initiate hold. 178 is the price target, and they ask the question essentially, is Apple dead money? We're monitoring a list of items that could also contribute to a prolonged dead money period for the stock, they say, including antitrust, regulation, a demand imbalance for consumer electronics, and competition. You want to size up that call and that idea?
I think it's appropriate, and I'd say dead money at best. They have not excited the market with any earnings report. I can't remember when, number one. Number two, I struggle to think of what impact AI will have on them. Sure, with Google, they'll use AI's Google Gemini. That's really it. I mean, what's Siri going to do? You know, so it's all going to be based on somebody else's technology, because Apple is an asset-light company, and they underspend in their R&D as a percentage of earnings versus almost any other tech company. So it's still major dollars because, you know, they generate so much revenue. But they're expensive, and we haven't seen any meaningful upgrades since even at the iPhone 10, that was supposed to be the seminal upgrade event. There was nothing there. I don't know if there's an appetite for having a camera that zooms in more. So I think AI, they have to talk about, they have to have an answer for the competition. I just don't see what it is. So I think it's an expensive stock for a no growth company.
Bryn, you want to take the other side of that?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I own Apple. I think where the analysts got it a bit wrong is it's a real bugaboo of his that they have one product, basically the iPhone. I would take the other side of that. There's 1.2 billion active iPhones. And I think that what they are going to do, I actually think Siri could be a Trojan horse here. I think that they're going to come out with a product that probably has 100% customer satisfaction. No one's going to an Android. The refresh cycle is just slowing. And so I do think, I agree with Steve, it could be dead money for a couple quarters. The chart looks terrible. It's making lower highs. But I do think over the next couple quarters could be a really nice spot to enter the name, because I know they are going to have a really great product that we all use that make our lives easier. And there's 1.2 billion people that will instantly adopt that.
Yeah, and those who've written this stock off, Joe, over periods of time have been proven wrong, to say the least.
Yes, they sure have. And, you know, it speaks towards Jim Cramer's mantra of own it, don't trade it. This is a company with a tremendous balance sheet. They know how to use that balance sheet, but you can't deny that clearly this stock is underperforming relative to its peers.
Well, sure. I mean, the stock's traded like it's broken.
Yes.
They need to get out of the schneid of these, you know, the to Weiss's point, the quarterly earnings reports and the revenue growth or lack thereof that has weighed on the stock. And they're also, you know, we're going to have to wait until mid-June, June, we think, for WWDC. So it's paid a price for being allegedly late to the whole AI announcement game. But we'll see what they deliver. I want to hit one more stock before we take a break. It's Lilly, because, you know, we've looked at mega caps before, and Lilly had been progressively rising in
yes.
terms of its mega cap because its weight loss drug showed potential now in a study to treat people with sleep apnea. Joe, you've owned it. We talked about this stock almost every day for a stretch where it had a run, a tremendous run a few months back. It's still up 30% year to date and 100% over the past year.
It is. And in early March, the stock peaked. It's been resilient since. It's, you know, moderated the advance, a little bit of a modest correction. I think 800 is the high from early March. I also think it's benefiting from the healthcare sector in general not offering too many appealing alternatives for investors exploring for opportunity in the healthcare sector itself. So healthcare, really, the last several years has kind of underperformed. And then you have Eli Lilly standing out, almost trading like a biotech. It is very universally owned. It's owned. It's a hedge fund VIP for sure.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to debate Tesla. The street's divided on the stock. So is the committee. Brin, as you know, is long. Steve Weiss is short. We're going to debate how to play it from here. Stock's down a lot this year. We'll do it next.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Welcome back. Tesla shares down more than 35% year-to-date, and the company now set to report earnings next week. Analysts divided on where the stock's heading from here. And so is the investment committee, it turns out. Brin long, why short? Brin, make your case. Why should we still believe in this stock story?
Well, the stock right now doesn't look good. So let's just separate the two, the stock from the company. Make no mistake, the chart looks terrible. Don't forget that in January of 2023, I bought it around 120. This stock got to, I think, $100 during the early part of one day of trading. And that's with earnings estimates of $5 for full year 23. So we're not even going to sniff that this year. So this stock could go lower. So let me make that clear. It looks broken right now. While I would not discount is Elon, is I think he's one of the most, you know, prolific innovators and engineers of our time with SpaceX. Literally, I think NASA would be defunded with what he's done with energy storage and EVs, and then at Neuralink. And so I do think, though, he is going to have right now between this earnings report, which will be bad, and the shareholder package, I think it's very murky right now because make no mistake, part of this valuation is based on sentiment and also valuations, margins, and earnings expanding. So I see absolutely why Steve is short. I don't think he's going to be short long term. I think it's probably a trade. But I think longer time, we will get some clarity. And this will be, over the next few months, a potentially good opportunity to add or buy to the position.
My question for Bryn, and I'm not trying to be difficult with this, is that as a fiduciary of her investors' capital, how could she invest in a company where there is no governance, there is no independent voice on the board, where they've gone out and made an acquisition like SolarCity, right, to stop it from failing because it was his brother's company and because the federal government told SpaceX, you've got to stop buying SolarCity bonds with the money we're giving you for R&D, where he's tried to buy, you know, use Tesla for the to buy material for his house, the windows, where he wants a $55 billion pay package, and where we saw Jack Dorsey with two companies. We've got Elon Musk with multiple companies that all require his time. Plus, there's the allegations, and we saw it on Joe Rogan's broadcast, of drug use. So how does a fiduciary own this company with anti-shareholder governance repeatedly time after time after time? Isn't it worth just passing on this and going to something you don't have to explain owning?
Yeah, well, I own this personally, first of all. This is a personal position. So I think, we love to own broad-based ETFs for the majority of our client base. So this is not a fiduciary decision. This is my decision. And so I think that, what you're pointing out, these things, I think you just don't like Elon. And so I think that if you separate yourself and say, look at this company, well, I think that's the truth, right?
I'm not showing you sentiment. Everything I said is a fact, Bryn. It's a fact.
I know, but why does he's a grown man and the Joe Rogan thing is just strange. And that was years ago.
It's not just Joe Rogan.
And so I think that if you just look at the company, if you look at the company, and when you still look at the two companies where the best engineers want to work, is our SpaceX and Tesla. Because this is not an Elon show as well, although it feels that way. He has to be able to retain top talent. And I think as it relates to Tesla specifically, being pragmatic about the company, as I said, the chart looks terrible. And they are in a very murky situation right now because it feels like, are you going to be a car company that's balancing higher revenues, higher earnings and margins, and then also innovating at the same time with full self-driving, more energy and robotaxi? Or are you going to do a full pivot to robotaxi? I think if they come out and do that, that's a revaluation of the name on the downside, because that is probably 5 to 10 years out. So,
and by the way, sorry, Brent, if this is principally a governance related story.
That's one aspect of it.
Sounds like it's a major one, however. You could, right? It's major.
Even put that aside, the fundamentals deteriorating. We've hit limit in terms of the EV adoption. They've got the oldest EV lineup in the industry globally. They've got 20% of their revenues coming from China. We've seen what China has done. Okay? We've seen Apple move their supply chain to India. And they've got better relationships and longer standing relationships with the Chinese government. We've seen China. China is supporting their domestic producers that, by the way, make newer, more richer in terms of the accessories, in terms of the range. So of their cars than Tesla. Number three, mm-hmm. We've seen Elon just tweet out, no more prices, we're raising prices. He lied. They're cutting prices. We would say big robo-taxi announcement. We secured funding for the take private. The guy is a pathological liar to keep his stock price up. So forgetting about that, the fundamentals deteriorating. You've got lots full of EVs that are selling at major discounts from the major auto players that couldn't sell them. So the fundamentals are horrendous.
Brent? Yeah.
So I think that with in
Excuse
China,
me, one more thing.
Actually, no, let Bryn go.
One more buzz line. It's like, once again, you just don't like Elon, by the way. And so it's like,
I
when
think
you
Elon's
look
a genius,
at,
and I've said that repeatedly.
When you look at the EV market, they're actually continue to be with BYD, the top selling brand in China. And so while we look at America, which is about 9% of the EV space, China, which Tesla was the single, it's like the only manufacturing company that was able to build in China autonomously without having influence from the Chinese government. He has a very strong relationship. I believe they're about to announce they're going to be building their next gigafactory in India, a huge untapped market. And so I think that when you look at this company in the U.S., if this was a U.S. EV story, I would not own this name.
That's
I don't think Americans want to drive
like
EVs.
And that's a hell of
I think
a defense.
Americans don't want to drive EVs.
Let me work this in, and you can say what you want. Then we're going to be done. Adam Jonas today at Morgan Stanley. Why do we remain overweight Tesla shares? And look, he's been, you know, skeptical along the way about, you know, the repeated price cuts and all the other stuff. We believe Tesla has significant attributes to be valued as an AI beneficiary, but the company must first see stabilization in the negative earnings revisions within the auto business.
Yep. Right, he's not saying they haven't. Yep. But Brin's entirely wrong about their ability to retain talent. If you take a look at Tesla, and you take a look at, we just had two critical people leave Tesla this week. Their turnover in their executive ranks and their engineering ranks is legendary, is unprecedented. So I don't know where she gets that from, but look at the facts. And I know it's maybe because I just don't like Elon that all these people are leaving, but I really had nothing to do with it.
No,
the stock is up 750% over the last 5 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And I haven't been short over 5 years. I'm short now because it's all coming home to roost.
I understand, but there are periods of time over the last 5 years where notable people have been short and it hasn't mattered because their shorts have been proven to have not worked well.
Again, I haven't been short, number one. Number two.
I understand.
How many other EV manufacturers have we had over the last 10 years?
Bryn?
What, I don't even know what that means.
How many price cuts have we had with Tesla models over the last 5 years?
I mean, wisdom is chasing you if you would just stop, okay? Like, seriously.
What the hell is she saying? I don't even get it.
Steve, we're going to take a break.
Just admit you're wrong and the stock is going lower. And I'll buy more lower. That's what she should be saying. Facts are facts.
There's no fact that the stock is doing anything.
There are facts with everything I said about the governance, about the price cuts, about his tweets that have all been wrong, about the competitive landscape, about the appetite for EVs. Those are all facts.
Bryn, we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
Let's get the headlines from Kate Rooney. Hi, Kate.
Hey there, Scott. So Speaker of the House Mike Johnson released an outline today of a four-part proposal on foreign aid and national security spending. Aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan is split into three different bills. And the fourth would be a combination of seizing Russian assets, forcing a TikTok sale, and putting more sanctions on Iran. Some of the money in those foreign bills would be positioned as a loan. Text of the bills is expected to be released later today. The speaker faces stiff opposition from some far-right lawmakers. Climate change, meanwhile, will reduce the world's future income by about 19% by 2050. That's about $35 trillion per year, according to research backed by the German government. The report found while almost all people would suffer, the poor and developing nations would be hit the hardest. And Ford is recalling over 450,000 compact SUVs and pickup trucks in the U.S. due to a possible loss of drive power. The National Traffic Safety Administration said could be because of a low battery charge and affects Ford Bronco, Sport SUVs, and Maverick pickups from 2021 to 2024. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Kate, appreciate that. Kate Rooney coming up. Chart of the day, United Airlines. That's soaring today on strong earnings. We debate it. We'll trade other stocks coming up, too, when we come back.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, let's get to our chart of the day. It is United Airlines today, and it is surging after its earnings. Look at that move. More than 14%, Joe T.
Yes.
You own the stock, right?
Yes, I own United Airlines. I own Delta, the Joe D like ETF.
I threw the ball right down the plate.
I'm just steadying myself, Scott. It's been an interesting last 5 minutes here. But anyway, low expectations for sure with United Airlines. And that's lifted the stock here. Stock is trading well intraday. It's lifting all of the airlines, JetBlue, American Airlines. Delta already had more of a positive trend, more of a positive formation. The good thing, if you're looking at the price action from UAL today and interested in buying it, you have a nice point of reference because now you have a gap from 41.71 up to 44.11, so you can work against that.
All right, we're going to have the setup for more key earnings coming up. First, though, Mike Santoli is going to join us next with his midday word. We are back. Senior markets commentator Mike Santoli joins us with his midday word. I won't ask you about Tesla.
Yeah, so
we'll move
to that
past
another
that.
Time. Yeah.
What's on your mind, though, today is, you know, again, we have more earnings coming in.
Yeah.
You know, we're still trying to figure out what this higher for longer playbook needs to be for the market. And I'm not sure the market's figured that out either.
Well, the market hasn't figured that out for sure. Trying to find where the equilibrium sits if we're going to actually have this better economy with higher rates and a slower Fed. I think if all that were the case, the market would make its peace. It would be fine. But the way you see consumer cyclicals not loving this rate move, the way you see the home builders, the way you see the transports, it shows you that it's not without risk, that the economy, of course, does not managed to absorb it perfectly well. I think that's the bigger kind of strategic fundamental piece of it. The other one is the life cycle of a pullback, which is right now the dip buyers are patient and the sellers are motivated. And that's because you broke loose of that very, very tight uptrend. And now it seems as if you got to go test and test and test. And the prices have to travel a little bit further to find buyers' conviction. And the S&P 500 is right in the gap from the NVIDIA earnings.
I was going to ask you about that. Right. So we're barely hanging on to 5,000 here. What's the significance of that number, and what are the numbers that really are on your mind?
Well, 5,000 or thereabouts, I mean, people have made some fuss about whether that's where a little bit of the hedging by market makers turns a little more negative and not. I'm not too focused on that. I'm more focused on where were we on February 21st when we already thought the economy was good and the Fed was going to ease, and then we got NVIDIA's earnings. And the S&P went from 49.80 to 50.80 in a day. It was a 100-point gain. The index is up 3%. And that really was another momentum push for the market. Now, it doesn't mean there's magic in 49.80 if we get there. It's only a 0.5% from here, whatever it is. But I do think it's interesting that we kind of go down in price and back in time and say things better or worse than they were then.
Well, the broader point, though, is to Adam Parker's point now, the importance that NVIDIA may hold for the next major market move.
Yeah.
More so than looking at the S&P. Look at NVIDIA.
Sure. I think you probably wouldn't love it if that's really what we were waiting for, because they're on a January fiscal year and the numbers come in May, right? So it's like things are going to happen before that. But semis today off the ASML number, obviously, are a drag. It's not awful breath. It seems really orderly on the downside, whether you want that or not. At this point, while you're waiting for the market to get oversold, that's what we have.
I'll see you on closing bell. I appreciate it. Netflix reports on Thursday, by the way, and we're going to give you the setup next. We got Netflix reporting tomorrow before the bell, which means I need to hear from Jason Snipe first.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel good about it. I feel good about it, Scott. I mean, obviously, it's run a lot into the number. I think what you need to really watch for is paid sharing. Content spend is down. Margins are expanding. Obviously, they added paid sharing. They've added ad-supported tier recently. Mm-hmm. Those are the metrics that I think you need to follow. There might be some softness in adding new members, but I think paid share will be the one to really follow.
Why should you have this, too?
I do, in a small position, and I'm of two minds on this, which means that between Jason and I, we average one. But here's what I'd say. I'm only kidding.
His is the one, yours is the zero.
Yes, there you go.
Look, here's what I'd say. Expectations are so high, I am concerned that they don't meet them. Similar to Amazon, by the way. The two in my portfolio have the highest expectations. But I do think they'll come through because content keeps getting cut back elsewhere. And if it doesn't, Netflix is one of those stocks that always bounces when they miss. So either way, I think we're okay. If it goes down, I will buy more.
25% year-to-date gainer. We'll see. I can't wait for that report as we start to kick off those big tech names. Final trades are next. Hope to join me closing bell today, 3 o'clock Eastern time. Josh Brown is going to be with me here at Post 9. John Mowry, Stephanie Link, T. Rose Sebastian Page. We're going to count you down to a very special closing bell. Don't want to miss that. Let's do final trades. Bryn, what do you have?
Yeah, I think the market's going to be choppy. Stay high quality. Cowes, COWZ, focuses on the companies in the Russell 1000 with the highest free cash flow yield.
Weiss.
Only because I like Janet Yellen, the two-year treasury at a 5% yield.
The fact that you like anybody is breaking news, but thank you very much for that.
Yeah, don't count on it coming your way.
No, that would be fine. That'd be fine. Jason Snipe.
I like AXP here. 12 million new members last year. I like this one.
Strong earnings report from Interactive Brokers. Stay long.
All right. We will take it right up to the finish today. I'll look forward to that on Closing Bell. The exchange begins right now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.